This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, 8:47 a.m, November 16th, Thursday. I'm Koo Soo Chuang, joined by Tan Chung Han and Melissa Idris. It's time of the day when we look at business news and some developments from Bank Negara, because they are now trying to, you know, basically turn the screws on their mandate to insurance companies to reduce their foreign shareholding limit to just 70% from current levels now. And the deadline is by June 2018. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, CIMB Research have run a research note yesterday disclosing and having done some churn some numbers, saying that if the foreign insurers were to choose the IPO route, they could potentially raise as much as about 5.2 billion ringgit from assorted IPOs, with a total market capitalization of 19 billion ringgit. Some of the biggest unlisted insurers right now are people like AIA, GE Life, Great Eastern Life, and Prudential.
Not bad. That would be great for Bursa if that does happen, right?
Yeah, well, great for Bursa, but then maybe not so great for the already listed insurance guys, right? Because that could suck out liquidity from their stocks. But just to zoom out here real quick, why is Bank Negara pushing this mandate? The idea is to give local insurance players more room to grow. Now, on top of that, you can also see more local participation in the domestic insurance space. In fact, you've got EPF CEO Dato' Cheryl talking about how if this happens, this would be a great opportunity for local investors to jump into the game, because, you know, EPF has been trying that for a while now. I mean, just to give you one quick number here, just to show the sheer dominance of these foreign guys in the life insurance market here, they account for almost 82%, 82% in 2016. That's the market share for foreign players in the life insurance space here in Malaysia.
Yeah, so I guess I'm just wondering what Bank Negara sees, the shift that Bank Negara sees, that perhaps now is the right time to have this cap be put in place, right? So, are the local players kind of ready now to kind of take the lead in a sense?
Well, this limit, this threshold has been in place since 2009. Mm. The only thing is the deadline is now looming for June 2018. Mm. So with about 8 months or so to go, it's not as if the insurers have not had some kind of like runway to make it happen. Mm. In terms of the market potential, it's actually massive, right? Because Malaysia generally is underinsured, underpenetrated, and Takaful is another huge sector. Some days ago, I spent some time with Syarikat Takaful Malaysia, you know, personally, because I'm just connected that way.
Because you hang out
not
that
really.
Way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not really,
you
not
hang
really.
Out those
I want to be like you one day, Lawe.
No, at a digital news agent conference with Karamjit Singh, right? So that's Sri Hassan. And he points out that Syarikat Takaful, in the last 9 years, and they are a Bank Islam sister company, right? They have seen their market value rise by something like between 13 and 19 times in the 9 years since. And it's really because it's really driven by the under-penetrated nature of the insurance market. Mm.
Now, just to be fair, kind of give the flip side here. You know, earlier this year, we spoke to Anthony Lee, who is the chairman of the General Insurance Association of Malaysia, PIAM, right? He says this. Now, when it comes to the foreign insurance companies, what do they offer here? Firstly, they offer this transfer of skills, right? They have helped develop the insurance space here in Malaysia, you know, and including training the local guys as well. That's what they say. Secondly, and perhaps more importantly for us as policyholders, they offer the kind of global width and depth when it comes to the assets that they hold,
right?
So that they can, you know, in times of crisis, they've got a lot more funds to draw on to make sure that you get covered. He cited the instance in Christchurch, right? You've got the earthquakes there. What happens? There's no local Kiwi insurance guys who could really take on those kind of coverage, right? So they had to rely on the broader pool that is out there for global players. So that's their side of the story.
I guess that's part of the commercial contract, because if you want to have dips into the local market, you've got to give back to the local market, right, by way of expertise.
Mm. But, you know, if we were to come back to this idea of whether we could see more IPOs, a lot of the research houses are saying, well, maybe it's more M&As rather than IPOs, to be completely honest.
Okay, let's chug along to another item in the news. Also financial services. Now, CIMB are apparently waiting for Philippine regulatory consent to set up their last piece of the ASEAN jigsaw puzzle in the country. Now, of course, this would be the second time, if they're lucky. Second time lucky, because I think 3-4 years ago, they tried to do so with Bank of Commerce. That fell through because of some regulatory issues, I think, with real estate also. But the thing is, what is different from then and now is that as opposed to then, perhaps they were looking for a branch network in terms of physical infrastructure. Today, mm-hmm. Because of the advancements in fintech, it might be a digital footprint.
That's really good. I mean, you know, leverage technology to kind of penetrate a country that you're... It's the last jigsaw. They just have to get the Philippines on their books. Then now they can have all 10 ASEAN countries. Because right now, Philippines is the only one. Yet last year they went into Vietnam and that kind of almost made their ASEAN dreams come true. But let's see whether they can succeed in the Philippines.
Yeah, well, as it stands, they're already in 15 global markets here. I mean, they have tried to pare down, I think, get out of Australia. I think Canada as well. You know, there were some movements there, at least according to their 2016 annual report. So a rejigging there, and obviously an ASEAN-centric focus moving forward. But they have had a rather patchy record when it comes to their ASEAN subsidiaries. Eh?
Thailand was a big
issue. Yeah, well, Thailand was most recent. You know, their 9 months performance, you know, coming in 30% lower on year. But if you go back a couple of years, CIMB Niaga, good God, like, you know, the kind of provisions that those guys had, CIMB, you know, had to write off
of
them.
The coal mining. They had issues with the coal mining business,
yeah, but,
I think.
Yeah, you know, but still, you know, I mean, I'm glad for them that they have kind of turned a quarter now, and hopefully with this Philippines venture, if and when it happens, or when it happens, you know, good luck to them.
It's a digital bank, right? They're looking, perhaps, because I believe the way they entered Vietnam was through a digital bank. So maybe they might be looking at the same kind of approach here for the Philippines.
And you look at it from the Philippines archipelago perspective. This is a country which is triple the size of Malaysia's population. It is a $350 billion GDP country. And it's all about the long term, right? Because even though you might have asset quality concerns or, you know, fee income volatility, for whether in Thailand or Indonesia, it is all about the long term. And ASEAN, what is that, 650 million people, combined $2 trillion in combined GDP output? I mean, so it's a long term. Right now, CIMB is number 5 in the region. That's not bad considering you're up against the DBSs of this world. Mm. So it's really a long-term play.
Or of the region, yeah. DBSs of the region, yeah.
Exactly, right? But the thing is, right now, the CIMB share price is in a bit of an ebb because of the MUFJ share placement that happened a couple of months ago.
Well, yeah, it's a whole string of stuff, Chong. I mean, this is a piece that the Malaysian Reserve kind of put forward that perhaps investors are a little bit concerned. You know, it's not just the Mitsubishi pulling out; it was Khazanah pulling, selling some shares immediately after that. Then there's also the data that was lost and all that kind of just boiling down. Nazir Razak also now setting up a PE, so private equity
$1 billion,
yeah,
I think.
There, you know. Investors are saying, well, is this something to be concerned about?
And still on financial services, this item, this a little nugget from the Malaysian Reserve saying that the government might consider reducing the salary, 60% salary cap for government civil servants to get them on the housing ladder. Because right now, if they have their salaries, if they have their disposable income at 40% of their salaries, they can't borrow any more money. But that might now be re-looked at.
Yeah, so is this a good idea? Because, you know, Tan Sri Ali Hamzah was saying that, okay, every civil servant should own their own home. Mm. The question is whether or not, this is a good move to kind of remove this cap.
Yeah, because if you look at media reports, you know, civil servants are already, you know, strapped for cash. They're even taking out loans to buy furniture, to even buy handphones, okay? If you want to go through some numbers here, between 2013 and 2016, I believe, over 3,000 civil servants were declared bankrupt. This, on, you know, despite the tremendous amount of aid that they get from Putrajaya, right? You hear it after or during every single budget tabling, right? Yet, you've got these guys who are in financial trouble. Now, they're trying to remove that 60% cap on their salaries when it comes to the home financing, etc. Is this a good move? Can they afford to be more leveraged?
And yet, you've got some research from the QPACs, Congress of Unions of Employees in the Public Civil Service. They've reckoned that nearly 50,000 civil servants are at risk of bankruptcy. Mm. But by way of counterpoint, guys, I live in a neighborhood which was basically terraced houses built way back when, aimed at civil servants. And, you know, those days, those houses were about 25,000 ringgit. Mm. Today, I'm not saying that my house is worth that much, but, you know, there's a huge multiple on that value. So, if you want to, you know, basically enable everybody to be some kind of like reach some kind of parity by way of wealth or retirement funds or you know, to narrow the wealth gap between the haves and the have-nots, you know, at the end of the day, real estate is the way forward. If you can somehow make enable civil servants to make a little bit more money going forward.
But that also assumes that what happened in the 70s, 80s, 90s in the property sector will play out over the next 3 decades as well.
Exactly. Mm. Well, it's 8:57 in the morning. Now we're going to be coming back in a few minutes with the news and the KLCI. Moving along, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.